This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Sin With Me by J.T. Geisinger, performed by Terry Clark Linden and Sebastian York.
To J. Who knew? The hottest love has the coldest end. Socrates.
Prologue. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 13 years since my last confession. I don't have to count the time. I remember exactly how long it's been since I've knelt in a small, stuffy confessional booth and stared through a tightly woven wooden lattice at a shadowed figure beyond. I remember because it's the last time I trusted God. The priest seated behind the screen murmurs, "The Lord be in your heart and upon your lips, that you may truly and humbly confess your sins. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen." I make the sign of the cross over my chest, fold my sweaty hands together, and rest my elbows on the narrow ledge jutting from beneath the lattice. My heart pounds like I've been running a race. But it's not a race that makes the blood roar through my veins. It's that old familiar demon I've spent half a lifetime with, the one that's carved its name deep into my heart. Shame. After a long, silent moment, the priest gently prompts, "Tell me your sins, my son." My throat closes. I swallow, fighting the claustrophobia that always follows me into small spaces. I envy everyone who's never felt this clawing, animal panic, this nauseating sense that all the walls are closing in. I feel trapped, sick, on the verge of screaming. Through sheer force of will, I manage not to leap to my feet and bolt. I clear my throat and start again. I'm guilty of everything. I don't know where to start. Just assume the worst. The priest answers gently, "Try to think of one specific thing. Start with whatever is most bothering you today." My grim laugh makes the priest tilt his head. I see him only in profile, the shadowed figure of a gray-haired man wearing black vestments. His posture indicates he's listening. He's interested. I wonder if he really thinks he can offer me absolution. I wonder what he'd say if I told him he can't. "A sin I committed long ago still eats at me, Father. And today, something happened today that reminded me of it all over again." "Have you confessed this sin to God?" "Yes." His answer is swift. "If God forgives you, son, you must also forgive yourself. The sacrament of reconciliation washes us clean and renews us in Christ." "Washes us clean? Bullshit. If I were clean, I wouldn't be on my knees whispering my secrets to a stranger." I grit my teeth, draw a slow breath through my nose, and fight to keep my voice steady. "I don't believe that." I'm startled to hear the priest chuckle. "Then why are you here?" Uncomfortable, sweating, fending off a sudden sharp dizziness that makes the room tilt, I retort, "Old habits die hard." The priest sagely nods. Though I can't make out his features or expression, I get the sense that he approves of my honesty. I don't need his approval. I need an unbiased ear who's legally and morally obligated to keep his mouth shut. I need a guilt dumpster. And if a Catholic priest isn't the perfect person for that, I don't know who would be. "What is this sin you can't forget?" When I remain silent, wrestling with the horror of saying the words out loud, the priest adds, "Some sins against other people can't be undone, but instead of hating ourselves, we can view it as a learning experience and an incentive to do good in the future instead of evil." An incentive to do good. My breathing hitches. I shift my weight, relieving the dull ache that's begun to settle into my left knee. "So doing good can help. It can help you forgive yourself, even though God has already done so. My ears buzz with a high-pitched sound, like a nest of wasps is hovering around my head. Forgiving myself isn't something I'm capable of. There's a reason shame and guilt exist. That reason is punishment. Sinners deserve punishment. It's the one thing the Catholic Church and I wholeheartedly agree on. But his words have caught fire in my mind. Maybe the answer I'm seeking has nothing to do with me. Maybe it has to do with restitution. Hope rises inside my chest like a cresting wave. Do I tell this person what I've done? I blurt. Beyond the lattice, there's a weighted pause. Only if it would be good for him or her. Would your admission benefit them in any real concrete way? Because if disclosure would cause more pain than good, you should bear the weight of your transgression alone. A confession to another person motivated solely by a selfish desire to make oneself feel better is in itself a sin. My heart pounds. My hands shake. Water pools in my eyes, making my vision swim. I say hoarsely, I don't know. I don't know. The priest says, well, my son, until you know, hold your tongue and trust in God. I can't trust in God. He abandoned me years ago. But I can hold my tongue. I've been doing that since the last time I confessed. And until I find out if disclosure is the right way to go, I can do good. I whisper the act of contrition. The priest recites words of absolution. I rise unsteadily, open the door of the confessional booth, and walk slowly past the empty pews, my heart thumping hard under my breastbone. When my cell rings, I fish it from my pocket and answer it without even looking to see who it is. Yeah? Brody, where the fuck are you, brother? We're all at the hospital. We thought you were following right behind us. I push through the heavy carved wooden doors at the front of the church and step out into a warm, brilliant Los Angeles afternoon. Even in February, it's a perfect 72 degrees. I close my eyes and lift my face to the sun. I'm on my way, Nico. Just had to make a quick stop. Well, hurry the fuck up. Chloe's about to fucking pop. You gotta be here when the baby's born. I'll be there in 10 minutes. And Nico? What? I open my eyes and look directly into the sun, letting it blind me. Tell Grace, would your admission benefit her in any real concrete way? Tell Grace what, brother? Nico says with a knowing chuckle. That you like the way her brains fill out her sweater? Just tell her I'm coming, I reply softly, and that she should call me if there's anything she needs me to pick up on the way. I disconnect the call before Nico's stunned silence can turn into questions. Then I jog over to my car, parked in the church lot in the shade of an early flowering magnolia tree. I feel the cold, familiar presence of my demon as he jogs along unseen behind me. Do good, do good, do good. God help me to do good. The demon's growling laugh follows as I tear out of the parking lot, tires squealing. God isn't listening, Brody boy, but you already knew that. I press my foot hard against the gas pedal, on my way to seek the redemption that's eluded me all these years.
1. Grace. Grace, if you don't wipe that look off your face, I'll slap it off, mutters Cat, standing next to me inside the luxurious private maternity suite that AJ booked for Chloe's labor. The suite has 3 rooms, 2 bathrooms, freshly cut orchids stuffed into vases all over the place, and a flat-screen TV almost as large as the one in my living room. Like everything else AJ does for Chloe, it's completely over the top. It melts my heart how that giant, surly caveman is such a teddy bear when it comes to his woman. They say music can tame a savage beast, but I have solid evidence that love is really the magic potion at work. Love can turn even the most terrifying beastie into a purring ball of fluff. What look? I turn to my best friend with my brows arched. She hisses under her breath. The look like you're trying to hold in a monster fart during church. I know you're not big on babies, but this is Chloe's special day. Oh, stop it, Drama-rama. I wave a hand dismissively in her face. For one thing, I wouldn't set foot in a church if God himself descended from the heavens on a golden chariot and ordered me to. Churches give me the creeps. All that hypocrisy, guilt, and repressed sexuality. Ugh. And for another thing, even if I do hate everyone else's spawn, I'm going to love Chloe and AJ's as if I produced it from my own vagina. Then what's with your face? She presses. Do you need to use the toilet? Instead of admitting I'm teary-eyed and emotional that this day has finally come, and my normal resting bitch face is having problems maintaining its status quo, I say breezily, I just can't stand the smell of hospitals. That isn't a lie. Hospitals have a distinct smell, antiseptic with undertones of agony and dead things, that's burned into my memory. In fact, it's one of the very first memories I have. I dig a bottle of Clive Christian perfume out of my handbag and spritz it into the air. And this place could really use more flattering lighting. No one wants to push a new human through her cooch under the harsh glare of fluorescence. It's uncivilized. I'll get some candles from the gift shop downstairs. Cat snorts. Oh, dear Lord. Please don't tell me you're gonna check the thread count on the bed sheets next. I narrow my eyes at the hospital bed near the window. Now that you mention it. Here we are, ladies. All checked in. The nurse is bringing Chloe up in a moment. Grinning like mad, Chloe's father, Thomas, bustles past us into the room. As usual, he's impeccably dressed in a bespoke Brioni suit. This one, a gorgeous navy blue, a crisp white dress shirt, and black Ferragamo loafers. He's also wearing a tie, a silk pocket square, and a watch worth north of $100,000. He's the only man I know who'd come to his first grandchild's birth, dressed like he's having lunch in Cannes with the President of the European Union. I expected of Chloe's mother, Elizabeth, however. She's the daughter of a British countess and would literally rather die than be caught en déshabillé. She follows Thomas into the room, sailing by in pink Chanel, a cloud of shalimar, and gleaming ropes of pearls. Grace! She takes my hands and kisses me on both cheeks. You look divine, as always. Eyeing my necklace, she asks, Is that the new Diva's Dream collection from Bulgari? The woman can spot anything expensive or couture from 1,000 paces. It's no wonder we get along so well. I nod, smiling. It is. I bought Kat and Chloe one, too, matching push presents for all of us. Elizabeth pats my hand, clucking like a mother hen. Such a good friend. Hello, Catherine. She turns to Kat and presents her cheek for a kiss. Kat obliges, and then Elizabeth hands Kat her purse as if she's the coat check girl in a restaurant. As Elizabeth minces away and disappears into the bathroom, Kat looks at me and rolls her eyes. I try not to laugh. Adopting Elizabeth's genteel accent, I say, Dear, my shoes could use polishing when you have a moment. Kat elbows me in the ribs. Shut up. And why are you the favorite? I've known Chloe's parents longer. I sweep my hair over my shoulder. It's impossible to complete with perfection, darling. Kat makes a retching noise and tosses Elizabeth's handbag onto a nearby chair. Emerging from the adjacent sitting room he's just inspected, Thomas enthusiastically claps his hands. So, what are we drinking? Scotch, vodka, a little gin and tonic to get the party started? We've got a fully stocked minibar here, ladies. It would be a sin to let it go to waste. Knowing Chloe's father as well as we do, neither one of us finds it odd that his first order of business is distributing cocktails. He's an interesting mashup of James Bond and Al Capone, always perfectly dressed and smooth as silk, with a martini in one hand while the other fondles a loaded gun stashed in his pocket. He might be a wealthy and well-respected attorney, but I know a carefully crafted mask when I see one. After all, I've got one too. Kat says, I'm good, thanks. She glances at the small suitcase near her feet. I want to get Chloe's stuff ready before she gets here. She makes her way to the bed, flops the suitcase on top of it, and then proceeds to unpack the few items of clothing inside. Thomas looks disappointed but shrugs. Grace, what can I get you? I drop my handbag on the chair next to Elizabeth's. I'm not sure my nerves will make it through the next few hours without fortification, so I say gratefully, I'd love a vodka rocks, easy on the rocks. He beams. Coming up. As he disappears into the adjacent room, a nurse pushes Chloe through the doorway in a wheelchair. She's wearing a blue cotton hospital gown and a pair of white ankle socks. She's also pale, sweaty, and clutching her huge belly with one hand. Holding her other hand, the enormous blonde bulk of her fiancé, AJ, follows right alongside. Despite not being able to see even a foot in front of him because of the brain surgery he underwent last year that left him blind, there's a distinct swagger in his walk. His grin stretches from ear to ear. His chest is puffed out like he's about to pound on it with his fists and let rip a deafening Tarzan yell. Look at him. He's a proud papa already, and the baby isn't even out yet. That man is going to be an incredible father. I quickly swipe at my eyes before anyone notices the water pooling in them. The nurse, a curvy 30-ish brunette with alarmingly tall hairsprayed bangs and penciled-on eyebrows, says soothingly, Okay, Chloe, this is your maternity suite. You'll be here for a while longer until we're ready to go into the delivery room. Your doula will be here any moment to start timing your contractions. Fuck! Chloe doubles over in the wheelchair. Her face is contorted with pain. Kat and I gasp. AJ cries, Angel! And drops to his knees beside her. The nurse, who has obviously seen this all a million times before, says cheerfully, Whoops, there's another one. While Chloe groans, Kat and I rush over to her, squawking and flapping our hands like a pair of hysterical pigeons. Honey, what can I do for you? Deep breaths, Chloe. Remember your training? Do you need water? Did you get your epidural? Should we move you to the bed? I started unpacking your clothes. What can we do to make you comfortable? Your father's making drinks.
Girls!
Thunders AJ. Kat and I instantly shut up. More softly, he says,
Thank you.
His unfocused gaze turns to Chloe. He rests his big paw on her shoulder and gently squeezes.
Chloe, sweetheart, are you okay?
Panting, she says between gritted teeth, There's a person the size of a watermelon trying to escape from my uterus. No, I'm not okay. Above her, the nurse shakes her head and mouths at us. She's fine. Darling, goodness. Chloe's mother stands outside the open bathroom door, clutching her pearls. AJ says,
She's just had a really strong contraction, Mom.
Another thing that melts my heart is how AJ calls his future mother-in-law, Mom. The man has so many layers of sweet under that scary tattooed exterior, it really gives me hope for the rest of humanity. I was referring to the cursing, says Elizabeth, dismayed. Chloe growls, I'm in labor, Mother. Elizabeth sniffs. There's no excuse for vulgarity, dear. I was in labor for a combined total of 46 hours with you and your brother, and I never once resorted to swearing. It's unseemly. The way Chloe is looking at her mother makes me think something very unseemly is about to come out of her mouth,
So to keep the peace, I interject. AJ, why don't we move her to the bed? I think she'll be most comfortable there. He's on his feet so fast he might as well have springs in his legs.
Arms around my shoulders, baby,
he murmurs to Chloe as he lifts her. When she's securely in his arms, he says,
Lead the way, Grace.
While Kat scrambles to get the suitcase off the bed, I put my hand on his arm and guide him over to it. Right here, feel it? When his knee bumps the edge of the mattress, he leans down, gently sets Chloe on the bed, finds her face with his hands, and then gives her a soft kiss.
Tell me what you need.
Just that. She sighs, settling back into the pillows.
There's my girl,
crows Thomas, coming over with a drink in each hand. Beaming at Chloe, he gives me my vodka rocks. I proceed to drink half of it in one gulp. This childbirthing business is stressful. A woman with long, flowy blonde hair and a gentle smile appears in the doorway. She gives the back of the door a hesitant knock.
Hello, my name is Nadine. I'm the doula.
She says it as if she's not entirely sure it's true. Elizabeth looks her up and down, frowning at her Birkenstocks and untamed hair. AJ says,
Yes, welcome. Come in.
Thomas asks, Would you like a drink, Nadine? Elizabeth says flatly, Thomas. Chloe groans.
Oh, shit sticks. Here comes another one.
Elizabeth exclaims, Chloe Ann Carmichael. The doula moves to the end of the bed.
Let's take a look and see how dilated we are, shall we?
I say, Okay, kids, I think it's time for us to leave you to it. We'll be in the waiting room with the rest of the gang. I lean over and kiss Chloe's forehead. She grunts.
What? You don't want to check out the gaping maw of my cervix?
Thank you for that disturbing visual. I grimace and take another swig of my drink. Kat comes over, bumps me out of the way with her hip, and kisses Chloe's cheek. Very softly, she says,
You're going to do great. Everything's going to be perfect. Try not to stress out. Just breathe, okay?
Chloe nods, and then her face puckers. She gasps,
AJ!
Kat and I leap out of the way before he flattens us.
I'm here, Angel. I'm right here.
When he starts to murmur something else into her ear, I turn away, smiling. Kat links her arm through mine. We say goodbye to Chloe's parents, gather our handbags, and quietly leave the room. After we've closed the door behind us and are standing in the empty hallway, Kat heaves out a shaky breath. You doing okay? She swallows hard, closes her eyes for a moment, and then nods.
Yeah, it's just fucking hospitals.
I know this must be taking an emotional toll on her. When Kat was a teenager, she got pregnant. She decided to go through with the pregnancy, arranged for the baby to be adopted, and even became friends with the couple who was going to be the adoptive parents. Then life decided Kat hadn't already been fucked over enough by her father abandoning her on her 8th birthday, the baby's biological father abandoning her when he discovered she was pregnant, and her mother dying on the same day Kat went into labor, because her baby girl died 3 days after she was born. Fucking hospitals. I agree, meeting her eyes. She stares at me a moment.
Are you okay?
She whispers, squeezing my arm. Usually it's an incredible gift having a friend who knows me so well, but every once in a while it's a royal pain in the ass. I hate people guessing I might be made of anything but titanium. I smile brightly. Of course. Her left brow climbs. Kat has mastered the art of the eyebrow arch. It always surprises me how a 2-inch section of facial hair can so perfectly telegraph emotions, ranging from curiosity to disbelief to withering disdain. Right now, it's calling bullshit on me. I insist. I'm bulletproof, Kat. You know that. Sure thing, Pinocchio. But your nose is growing. She looks pointedly at the glass of vodka in my hand.
Eagle-eyed witch.
Hey, don't blame me. I was just being polite. Thomas hates to drink alone.
Thomas? Cat mimics.
Yes, Thomas. That's his name.
That's funny, because I always call him Mr. Carmichael. You know, out of respect.
I grin at her and again adopt Chloe's mother's voice.
Yes, dear, the help should always be respectful of their betters.
She barks out a laugh and shakes her head. Screw you, Grandma. A delightful invitation, but I'm currently screwing a gorgeous and extremely well-endowed talent agent from CAA.
No!
Kat exclaims.
Who is he? Why haven't you told us anything about him? Spill, spill!
She's excited, and more importantly, distracted from any more questions about my emotional state. Exactly as I'd hoped. I tell her about my latest conquest as I lead her down the hallway toward the waiting room, where the rest of our crew awaits. With the exception of one Brody Scott, lead guitarist for Bad Habit, whose hauntingly intense green eyes I haven't been able to get out of my head in the year and a half since we first met. Which is exactly why I won't go anywhere near him. An attraction that powerful is too dangerous for someone with no past or future, and who has a black hole in her chest where a living, beating heart used to be. 2. The moment Kat and I enter the waiting room, Kenji leaps to his feet with an ear-splitting shriek and collapses on us as if he's the one in labor and not Chloe.
Oh my God, tell me what's happening. Is she having the baby right now?
It comes out in an almost unintelligible, breathless burst. Wearing a vintage red velvet smoking jacket over white leather pants, paired with hot pink combat boots, his nails painted as red as his lips. It's Valentine's Day, after all. He hangs onto us, clutching our arms, swooning and fluttering his false eyelashes. Being careful not to smudge his perfectly applied foundation, Kat plants a kiss on his smooth cheek. It takes a little longer than that, honey. He turns his big brown eyes to her. How much longer? She lifts a shoulder. Could be a few hours, could be a day. His gasp alone is so dramatic he could win an Oscar for best performance. Combined with his look of utter horror and the way he recoils with his hands on either side of his face, it sets Kat and me off into gales of laughter.
A day?
He squeaks, outraged.
That's barbaric. That's inhumane. That's cruel and unusual punishment just for riding the baloney pony. Oh.
He flops back into the chair he was sitting in when we entered and lifts a shaky hand to his forehead.
I'm so glad I don't have a vagina.
Standing next to Kenji's chair with his hands on his hips and a grin on his face, Nico drawls,
Well, that's one mystery solved.
Kenji goes from fainting ingenue to smoldering seductress in 1 second flat. He crosses his legs, bats his lashes at Nico, and purrs up at him.
Would you like proof, you sexy thang?
Amused, Kat crosses to Nico and wraps her arms around his waist.
Stop hitting on my husband, Scarlett O'Hara. This bad boy is mine.
Nico, spectacular in tight jeans and a black t-shirt that looks painted onto his muscular chest, takes Kat's face in his hands and kisses her. As usual, it's embarrassingly passionate. Those two take public displays of affection to a whole other level. Don't get me wrong, I'm all for sex in public places, but kissing, snuggling, lovey-doveying, barf. Kenji purses his lips and mutters,
He was mine first, bitch.
I hand Kenji the rest of my vodka. Here, You need this more than I do. He accepts it gratefully, sighing.
Oh, Lovey, you're the only one of this rotten crew who understands me.
He downs the drink in one gulp and then looks around hopefully. Where's the bar in this joint? Hospitals don't have bars in them, Einstein. Kenji gazes up at me in consternation. Then how did you get this? He rattles the ice cubes in the empty glass in his hand. There's a minibar in Chloe's maternity suite, courtesy of her father. He looks thoughtful. Do you think they'll mind if I just pop in for a little refill? If I'm going to have to sit in this hideous mauve waiting room with Dolly Parton playing on the speakers for a day, I'm going to need booze or I'll go absolutely mad. I chuckle. Actually, I think Chloe's dad would be thrilled if you went up and asked for a drink. Kenji pops to his feet and beams. I knew I liked that man. He lowers his voice to a whisper. Even if he is a Republican. He says the word Republican as if it's murderer. I say wryly, sweetheart, I think you're the last person in the world who should be judgmental. He tisks, waving me off as ridiculous. Oh, honey, it's wrong to judge someone on something they're born with, like their race or sexual orientation, but if you choose to be an idiot, that's a different story. Right, because no Democrat in history was ever an idiot. He stares at me for a beat, and then says icily, For the sake of our friendship, I'll pretend I didn't hear that. With a flourish, he turns and sashays away. Looking around the empty waiting room, I ask Nico, What happened to the guys? Barney, Nico's bodyguard and driver, and Ethan and Chris, the keyboardist and bassist for Bad Habit, are nowhere to be seen. We'd been having a barbecue at Nico and Kat's house when Chloe went into labor. We all drove to the hospital together, but somehow managed to leave Brody behind at the house. Nico says, In search of food. More food? I think Barney had about 2 dozen of those ribs you made. His arm still around Kat, who's attached to his side like a barnacle, he laughs. Yeah, that boy's got a big appetite. You should see him put away my hush puppies. I have to make an extra batch just for him. Because life is entirely unfair, not only is Nico Nix gorgeous, talented, loyal, and sexy, he can also cook. Kat had to step up her exercise routine from 3 to 5 days a week just to keep her weight the same after she moved in with him. Suspiciously casually, Nico adds, And I just got off the phone with Brody. Act natural. Act disinterested. Don't look at Kat. Busying myself with sitting in a chair, slipping off my heels and digging through my handbag as if I'm in search of something important, I say, Oh?
Mm-hmm. He's coming now.
Pause.
He said to tell you to call him if you need him to pick up anything on the way.
Startled, I abandon my fake rummaging. What? Nico has these ridiculously disarming dimples that flash in his cheeks whenever he smiles, or is trying not to smile as he's doing now.
You heard me.
Kat sends me her 1,000-yard expert sniper stare. I know I'm in for some serious interrogating the minute we're alone together. To mitigate the damage, I laugh. I aim for carefree, but unfortunately it comes out sounding a little panicked.
Oh, he's just playing with you. I don't even have his phone number.
Like the statement about hating the smell of hospitals, this is another suspicion-deflecting gem that also happens to be true. I don't have Brody's phone number. Forget about the fact that he's tried to give it to me several times. I don't have it because I've refused.
Are you seriously trying to pretend there's nothing going on between the two of you?
Kat straightens her spine and glares daggers at me. I saw you at the house, Grace. When I blink innocently, she rolls her eyes. After you said you were going to the bathroom and Brody followed you, and then you both disappeared for like 15 minutes, and then you came back all red-faced and flustered, and Brody came back looking like the cat that ate the canary. Nico whistles.
Ooh, she went there.
Yes, I did. And I will not have you keeping secrets from me. Kat stamps her foot. On anyone else, that would look ridiculous, but somehow she pulls it off. Probably on account of her being exotically beautiful, which imbues most of the ridiculous things she does with effortless chic. I say to Nico, is it me or is she unusually bossy today? In his slow southern drawl, Nico deadpans,
darling, if you think I'm going anywhere near an answer to that question, you're crazy.
Fortunately, the gods of distraction are on my side, because at that moment the guys stroll back into the waiting room. Chris and Ethan, dressed like twins in alligator cowboy boots, ripped jeans and white t-shirts, their arms covered in tattoos, sprawl into a pair of chintz chairs opposite me and start chomping on cafeteria hamburgers, while Barney, holding a sub sandwich in one hand and a Coke in the other, directs a question to Kat.
Everything good?
Kat nods. She's all checked in. They're in the maternity suite now. Her contractions are already coming pretty close together, so we should get an update soon about how long they think it will be before the baby comes. Barney looks satisfied. He takes a huge bite of the sub. He's wearing his standard-issue black Armani suit and white dress shirt open at the collar, the only outfit I've ever seen him in, and the gold Rolex that was a birthday present from Nico. He's got a perfectly groomed goatee and a full head of dark hair cropped short with military precision. Combined with his linebacker shoulders and piercing dark eyes, he's always struck me as what a proper mafia hitman would look like. Dangerous. He's also dangerously hot. If you like guys who wear guns under their suits and are named after purple dinosaurs. Then Nico turns his head and breaks into a grin. He says to someone out of my line of sight,
glad you could make it, slowpoke.
It's interesting the way my pulse spikes when I realize he must be speaking to Brody. Interesting and annoying, because I'm not the kind of woman whose pulse is easily spiked. I was once robbed at gunpoint by a crackhead, and my reaction was to look at him and calmly say, I'm happy to give you money for drugs, but what you really need is a hot meal, a hot bath, and a hug. He took the money.
You guys ran out so fast you left tire marks on the driveway.
Brody rounds the row of chairs I'm sitting in, trades a back-slapping hug with Nico and a nod to the other guys, and then asks Kat,
how's Chloe?
I'm too busy staring at him to hear the answer. There's just something about him that's so cool. I don't know how else to describe it. He's very good-looking, but in an approachable boy-next-door sort of way. Unlike Nico, whose body looks carved by Michelangelo from a perfect piece of granite, or AJ, who's the size of the Hulk, Brody is slim and graceful like a runway model. His shoulders are lightly framed in muscle, his waist is narrow, his legs are long and lean. He has a lope like a wolf's, a Cheshire cat grin, and a husky laugh that puts you in mind of the bedroom. The man is just plain sexy. He also dresses like a Johnny Depp GQ ad, which sets my lady parts a-quiver. A well-dressed man simply slays me. Today he's wearing black Doc Martens and black designer jeans, paired with a pale gray dress shirt, cuffs rolled up his strong forearms, topped with a fitted black silk vest. A leather cuff adorns one wrist. Around his neck on a leather cord is a small silver medallion. He's got a silver ring on his right thumb, a silver stud in his left ear, and a wicked gleam in his dark green eyes.
Busted.
I break eye contact with him and pretend to inspect the hideous still life of flowers on the opposite wall. In a low voice, Brody says,
Grace.
That's it. Just my name. But hell if it doesn't raise all the little hairs on the back of my neck and make my nipples hard. God damn it. Hello. I continue to stare at the painting. Across from me, Chris and Ethan smirk around mouthfuls of burger and share a glance. Apparently, I didn't sound quite as disinterested as I was aiming for. Nico clears his throat and tries to make some casual conversation to relieve the sudden odd tension.
So you said you had to make a stop on the way.
Yeah, I did.
There's the strangest tone in Brody's voice, almost as if he's embarrassed. I glance at him and find him looking at the floor, squeezing the back of his neck with one hand. His face is turning red. In my practice as a marriage and family therapist, I've seen 1,000 men tell 1,000 lies. I've become something of an expert at detecting them. Unlike sociopaths who can lie without batting an eyelash, a generally honest man with something to hide becomes very uncomfortable when questioned. He shows his discomfort in concrete, physical ways that he isn't aware of. A hard swallow, a shifting gaze, a nervous laugh. The list goes on, but one thing these tells all have in common is that they're unconscious and uncontrollable. And obvious as hell. I don't think Brody's admission that he made a stop is a lie, but whatever the stop was is something he definitely doesn't want to talk about. Well, good. One more reason to stay away from him. My two best friends got involved with men who had massive secrets, and I want nothing to do with that kind of drama. Some straightforward shagging followed by a quick exit is much more my speed. Speaking of which, I dig my cell phone from my handbag. As Nico smoothly turns the conversation to another topic, I send a text to my dick du jour, Marcus. My friend went into labor today. I'm at the hospital. Have to cancel dinner tonight. Because he's a talent agent to some big movie industry names and has to be available 24/7, his phone is always attached to his hip. So even though it's Sunday, it's no surprise when I immediately see three little dots appear on the screen, indicating he's composing his answer. I've never had sex in a hospital. There are some women who'd be insulted by that response, especially since today is Valentine's Day, and it's supposed to be all about the hearts and flowers, yada yada yada, but his interest in casual sex as opposed to committed relationships is one of the top two things I most enjoy about Marcus. I'll give you a hint what number one is. It has four letters, starts with a C and ends with a K, and is longer than 8 inches. I type. I have. It's not as exciting as you might think. Unlike the man himself, his answer comes fast. Quickie in the parking lot? I consider it, but decide to pass. I suppose I can forego cock for a few hours for my best friend. This time. Can't. I'll catch up with you later. Send me a dick pic to tide me over. I have to wait a little longer for his answer, but my patience is rewarded by a gorgeous close-up shot of Marcus's erection, jutting proudly from his unzipped trousers. I'm sure he's sitting behind the desk in his home office at this exact moment, reviewing some boring contract, but getting a boner is like his superpower. The slightest sexual innuendo will make the man's dick jump to life as if it's spring-loaded. My thumbs fly over the keyboard of my iPhone. Stroke it. I want video. The conversation continues around me, but now I'm completely focused on the cell in my hand. I swear these things are mankind's greatest invention. After about 30 seconds, a video loads, opens, and starts to play. Loudly. As he strokes himself, Marcus's deep baritone blares from the phone.
You want my hard cock, baby? You got it.
I yelp and try to get the video to stop. In my fumbling rush, I hit the lock button instead. The screen goes dark, but Marcus's voice plays on.
Right fucking here for you anytime you want it.
Kenji, whose timing is always impeccable, returns with his drink in hand just in time to hear Marcus say,
You bad, sexy girl. You make me so fucking hard. I want your sweet, wet pussy on my face.
Jesus Christ!
I shout at the phone, frantically hitting the volume button on the side. I finally get it silenced and blow out a relieved breath. When I look up, everyone is staring at me. Ethan, Chris, and Barney all have mouthfuls of food but have stopped chewing. Kat's eyes are wide and unblinking. Nico looks as if he might burst into laughter. Kenji has a hand to his throat and has gone pale. Brody's dark brows are lifted high on his forehead, but it's not from shock. It's from amusement, evidenced by the way his voice shakes with repressed laughter when he says,
I have so many questions.
My composure regained, I simply smile at them all and wave a hand as if I'm passing by in a royal carriage procession. Oh, that's just a work thing. Research. I stuff the phone back into my handbag and keep my serene smile on my face, even when Barney says in a husky tone,
If that's from your work, I need to change jobs.
I meet his penetrating gaze and wink. I can always use another hand around the office. Kat snorts. Use being the operative word. My God, lovey, says Kenji, fluttering his lashes. Who was that? And can I get an introduction? I press my lips together to keep from laughing. Marcus, all 6'4", 230 pounds of him, would break Kenji in half. The appearance of Thomas interrupts any further questioning. He bursts into the room, shouting,
Chloe's dilated to 7 centimeters.
With her brows pulled together, Kat exclaims,
Already? That's so fast.
Concerned by the look on Kat's face, I ask, Is that bad? What does it mean? Thomas chuckles.
It means she's swearing like a sailor and giving her mother fits.
Kat flashes me a look but doesn't say anything else. My concern deepens. Thomas adds,
They took her into the delivery room with her mother and AJ. The doctor seems to think it won't be more than an hour or so before the baby's out.
An hour? Kat repeats slowly. While all the guys murmur their approval at how efficient Chloe seems to be at hatching new members of the human race, I watch Kat. She's gone pale and has started chewing on her lower lip, sure signs of distress. I pity Nico. I know his wife's mama bear instinct is going to make her freak out with worry until she can see for herself that Chloe and the baby are both fine. I slip my feet back into my heels and am about to go over and comfort her, but Brody beats me to it. He moves closer to Kat, bends his head down near hers, and says softly,
My sister's first kid came really fast, too. It's not that unusual.
Kat looks up at him. Her big almond-shaped eyes fill with hope.
Really?
Brody nods, smiling down at her reassuringly.
Chloe's gonna do great. She's strong and healthy. Everything's gonna be fine. I promise.
He sounds so confident that Kat actually lets out a relieved breath.
Thanks, Brody.
He nods, shares a smile with Nico, and then whistling, casually strolls away toward a vending machine on the other side of the room, as if he didn't just prevent a nuclear meltdown. As the rest of the group chats with Thomas, I follow Brody over to the vending machine. He's staring at the collection of candy and chips behind the glass like it's a maddening puzzle. When I walk up beside him, he asks, salty or sweet. Without hesitation, I pronounce, salty. He grins, nods his satisfaction as if I've passed a test, inserts a bill into the machine, and presses a key for his selection. A bag of salt and vinegar potato chips falls from its shelf. Brody retrieves it from the tray and turns to look at me, his cocky grin still firmly in place. I say, thank you. He knows exactly what I mean. His shrug is dismissive. He tears open the package of chips, pops one into his mouth, and starts to munch. I briefly admire the sun-kissed glow on his cheekbones, the copper and gold highlights in his finger-combed brown hair, and the way the muscles in his square jaw flex with every chew, before mentally slapping myself and getting back to what I was saying. No, really. Thank you. If Nico or I tried to reassure her, it probably would have made her worry even more. Brody swallows. He licks a fine dusting of salt off his lips. His full, sculpted lips, which now glisten with moisture, might as well be calling out, "Kiss me," in a sultry voice. Stupid lips. Looking straight into my eyes, Brody says in that low, sexy voice of his, "I didn't do it for her." I think, holy sparkling unicorns. The way my hoo-ha is tingling, I might as well be watching Ryan Gosling prance naked through a Tiffany store in Paris. I need to never ever speak to this man again. Then the clinically trained part of my brain muses, could this be what it feels like to lose your mind? My pulse accelerates, my palms start to sweat, and my stomach flutters like a flag in a stiff breeze, but I keep my expression neutral. I'm excellent at that kind of thing, having practiced it every time I've been near him in the past 18 months. Oh, well, either way, it was a nice thing to do. Nice like when I kissed you in the bathroom at Nico's? My pulse zooms into Formula One racing mode. Naked Ryan Gosling dives into a pile of emeralds and rubies and comes up spouting gold coins. Steady, Grace. Steady. When you tried to kiss me, I correct. Brody's gaze drops to my mouth.
I don't know. When two people's lips meet, I think that's technically a kiss.
When he looks back up into my eyes, his own are burning. This is how it's been since the first time our eyes met. That click, like something snapping into place. The aha. When you remember something you'd forgotten. Kat took Chloe and me to see Bad Habit playing a gig at the House of Blues, and there he was, up on stage, slinging his guitar around his hips like he was fucking it. He looked over at me standing in the shadows off stage and grinned at me, and I just about had a heart attack. He was the sexiest man I'd ever seen. Every cell in my body screamed, "I want." I've been avoiding him like the plague ever since. It's not a kiss if there's no tongue. Besides, you wouldn't know what to do with me. I was going for playful, but there's a distinct edge to my voice, almost like a challenge. Wonderful. Even my voice has a lady boner for this guy. Brody moves closer so I can smell the soap he uses, the wind-clean fragrance of his skin. He leans in and whispers into my ear.
I know exactly what to do with you, Grace. And you know I do. So when you're done with your latest disposable boy toy and find the guts to give me a chance, you know where to find me.
Then he turns and walks away, leaving me flushed and flustered, heart racing, hands trembling, full of exquisite longing for something I know I can never have. Fate doesn't play favorites with girls like me. 3. Exactly 1 hour later, just as Thomas is about to try to get an update on Chloe's progress, AJ and Chloe's mother appear around the corner of the waiting room wall. She has her arm linked through his and is carefully leading him, murmuring directions in a low, somber voice. AJ's cheeks are wet with tears. My stomach drops. Everyone falls silent. Sitting next to me, Kenji grips my arm with a little gasp of horror. From one breath to the next, the mood in the room goes from happy to terrified. If AJ Edwards, biggest, baddest, badass of them all, is crying, it can only mean one thing. Disaster. From the chair on my other side, Kat leaps to her feet. She cries, AJ? He exhales a long, shuddering breath. His mouth works, but no sound comes out. Elizabeth pats his hand. She says quietly, It's all right, dear. Tell them. Everyone stands. No one makes a sound except for Thomas, who jerks forward a few feet and sputters, What is it? What's happened? AJ makes an awful choking noise. He drags the back of one hand across his eyes. Then he sucks in a deep breath and shouts at the top of his lungs,
It's a girl!
A beat of silence. Then we all start screaming and rush him, everyone talking at once. I throw my arms around the huge bulk of AJ's shoulders. I hear the guy's gruff congratulations, Kat's happy wail, Thomas's curses of relief. Kenji's scream sounds like an air raid siren. We're a big ball of laughter and tears, arms entangled around one another, hugging, euphoric, jumping and jostling, making a scene, but not one of us cares. Chloe and AJ have a little girl. For the first time I can ever remember, I start to cry. Congratulations, big guy, I whisper, my wet face resting against AJ's shoulder. You're a daddy. Blubbering like a baby, AJ drops his forehead to mine. He's crying so hard his whole body shakes.
I'm a daddy,
he repeats hoarsely, then bursts into another round of sobbing. I start to laugh through my tears. Happiness expands inside my chest, so hot and big it feels as if it might break me wide open. Elizabeth says, I hope we didn't scare you too much. AJ wanted to be the one to tell you all, so I had to give him a moment to compose himself. She beams up at him, her eyes shining with pride. He was a rock for Chloe in the delivery room, but as soon as the doctor put the baby into his arms, well, you can see. AJ sobs again. I've never seen anything more adorable. How's Chloe? I ask. Perfect, answers Elizabeth. Her doctor said he's never seen such a fast, easy first delivery. She only pushed for 17 minutes, and Abigail's already nursing. Things couldn't have gone better. Gulping and hiccuping, AJ nods emphatically. Abigail Alexandra Elizabeth Edwards, whispers Kat, her voice shaky. It's the name Chloe and AJ had picked out if they had a girl, honoring their mothers with the two middle names. I meet Kat's watery eyes and reach out for her. We clasp hands and squeeze hard, smiling at each other.
When can we see the little muggle?
Sniffles Kenji. His face is blotchy. His cheeks are streaked with mascara. One of his false eyelashes is hanging askew. If he had any idea what he looked like, he'd faint. Chloe can have visitors as soon as she's ready. She's going back to the maternity suite in a few minutes. I know she wants to see you all right away. Elizabeth turns her gaze to me. She really wishes you girls were with her during the delivery, but the hospital policy is 2 people maximum in the delivery room. We know. I swipe beneath my eyes with my fingers. Then, from over my shoulder, a tissue appears. I turn. Brody winks at me and wordlessly waves the tissue. Thanks. I take it, wipe my face, try to not like him even more for being so sweet and thoughtful, fail utterly, and then decide I need another drink because this day is far too emotional for me to handle sober. Thomas, I say, turning to him. Do you have any champagne in that minibar?
Do I have champagne?
He scoffs, squaring his shoulders and jutting out his chin. You might as well ask if the Pope